Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This podcast is brought to you by Men's T Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's T Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-T today or visit mensteclinic.com. That's mensteclinic.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Here we go. It's hour number two of the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. Hope you're having a fantastic afternoon, and you have a great weekend. Unreal. The puck luck last night, to have that breakout in the second period, to have Ottinger playing like that. The dude had, 41 saves, I think? Three of the luckiest goals see in an entire season. They happened in one game for the Avalanche. Now, you create your luck, and I think it's wise to acknowledge that the Avalanche were also the better team. But as it happens in hockey from time to time, the better team doesn't always win. Because there is the puck luck, the hot goaltender, the better goaltender, you know, whatever it might be, or taking advantage of your opportunities when you have a chance to shoot. Maybe your counterattack is working well, and the other team is having success in the neutral zone, winning the puck and getting back into your third. But when the game opens up and the counterattack, you just happen to be good, so you can let them hold the puck. You can believe in your ability to block shots and counterattack, still get outshot and say, hey, we liked our strategy tonight against this aggressive Avalanche forecheck. This is what we went with. They outshot us, but we felt like we had the higher quality opportunities. And, you know, if you would have talked about that way about last night's game through two periods, I would have been like, yeah, cool. You know, I can go with that narrative that, hey, the Stars were on fire at home. We let them bring the game to us quite a bit. But when we did have the puck and when we counterattacked, we were damn good in our penalty kill was great, once again. But, right now, the thing that sucks going into Game 7 is you really have to acknowledge that the Avs for at least half the time have been the better team. And now you're having to, try to go walk this absolute gauntlet to try to get the job done in advance because of the missed opportunity that last night's third period represented. How confident are you guys now? The Franklin Frankel Injury Attorney text line is open at 877-881-1053. Does that feel like it could be Rangers in 2011 gut punch that you can't recover from when you come home?
I just think the track record of DeBoer and these Stars, even this season, let alone big picture looking at previous postseasons, this is as battle-tested a bunch as you will ever find. And the way they ended the regular season and some of the games in this series, you're like, there's just no way. And the fact that they're even here right now forcing a Game 7 versus an Avs team that is absolutely one of the biggest title contenders going and being down Miro and Robo, the fact that you're even here is already extremely impressive. But I do expect – it's weird how you have the volatility of their physicality. We have some games where you're feeling like, okay, yeah, they're matching kind of hit for hit here. They really want this thing. They're going. And then you have games like last night, you get out hit big time. And so, but I think this game seven at home with the way Otter's playing, and now that you've got the resurgence of Mikko and the way he's playing and that Rupe, Mikko, Granlund line right there, just absolutely nasty. I trust this team.
Yeah, we all know, guys, I picked Colorado in six. And I think that Colorado is, since this thing got to a game six where Dallas had a chance to eliminate him, I'm like, please do it now. And because everything that I've watched enough playoff hockey through my lifetime that to have seen these just weird, fluky plays ends in series. And maybe Colorado, maybe they used up all their fluky goals to get in, you know, to get this to a game seven. That's kind of my hope. You know, Dallas had a couple of goals, you know, 9 seconds into a game, blocker save, goes behind the goalie. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of things you could say. Well, Dallas had some puck luck too, but
they did.
I tell you what, it to me, I just want to believe that at home, Dallas can get this done.
And the Avs spent so much energy last night.
I want to believe that.
Yeah.
I think Colorado, honestly, with all the injuries that Dallas is dealing with right now, Colorado's the better team. They just are. I mean, last night they played better. Dallas played great. If Dallas plays like they did in the second last night, they're going to be fine. They're going to be fine in this game seven. Yeah, you want to believe that all this game seven magic that Pete DeBoer has.
Yes.
But there could be a time where, oh, there's the one. And this is the type of team that I worry about. I mean, they are, this Colorado team's built. They've got their captain back, and he no longer has any rust to him. But, yeah, I just want to believe with this home crowd here that Dallas will step on that ice and play like they did, you know, like they played in game five.
I think that the Stars have a great track record of being great in these big time situations. I love the quote from Otter last night. He says, I think we should just pull from the past. He said, for me personally, I'm just going to try to have fun and have no regrets and play as well as I can and see what happens. I think it's that mindset that has allowed them to be great in these moments where all the pressure is on. Yeah. Can you just have fun and try your hardest? Because so many of the players are going to be out thinking it.
Dallas has the better goalie. They just do. They have the better goalie. But what needs to happen is instead of your netminder facing 40 some odd shots, put those 40 shots on their guy.
Amen.
Because he looks like to me that he could be a little leaky. You know, maybe some of the post coverage, maybe not getting over fast enough, maybe losing pucks. You know, the goals that Otter's given up seems like they've been really, really fluky goals. But, man, I just think that they've got to find ways to get more shots on net, because I think Colorado will crack that way. I just don't think they have the best goalie. And if they win this series, it's probably because they didn't have the best goalie, but their offense was just that much better.
So, you know, if you could forget the fact that you picked the Avs to win in six,
yeah,
you would pick Stars in seven now? Or do you feel like you got to be loyal to that pick?
Oh, no, I'm glad, you know, like I said, I'm glad I'm wrong. I'm glad I'm wrong, but it's still, I think Colorado's the better team. My hope is that Dallas, because Dallas has, you know, each one of these teams, the thing with Dallas, which is really interesting, and I don't think anybody's really talked about this, both times where it's been more than one day rest, Dallas has lost both those games. Hmm. So maybe if you're the Stars, you know, it's just one day rest. You get a little bit of a rhythm when you play these games. And then all of a sudden TV tells you, well, you're going to get two nights off now. Mm-hmm. But both times they've had two nights off, Dallas has lost the game coming back. Maybe they get back in that rhythm here Saturday night.
972 says, I think we give the Avalanche too much credit. They finished third in the division for a reason. If we struggle against the Avalanche,
yeah,
but beat them, just the Jets.
They're very similar, though. Look what Colorado completely remade their team at the trade deadline. They weren't the best team. They went out and made a ton of trades. Went out and got two goalies. You know, they went out and made, they totally remade their team to get here. Yeah, they've got star players, but look at their history this season. You're right. They haven't played well. There was third for a reason.
I mean, over six games and so many hours of hockey, they've had the lead for the vast majority of the time. I would say this, though, that the Stars are close. You know, it's like 52-48.
They're down two of their best players. Sure. I mean, Jason Robinson, you could throw him in as one of their best players. That's 30 goals you're taking off the ice right there, and you're taking one of the top five defensemen in the league off the ice too.
Yeah.
You know, that's difficult. And that's one of the reasons why I thought Colorado would win, and I thought it was going to be difficult for Dallas to win in Colorado.
Better coached. Your coach has an edge historically. Clutch in game seven.
Well, their coach has a Stanley Cup win.
More clutch, right? But DeBoer's owned him, you know?
Yeah. Well, he's owned Colorado, and yeah, You got him last year, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and then DeBoer's record in game sevens. You know, I just think there's something to the clutch factor that the Rangers exhibited. I believe in this stuff.
You're right.
I think Jordan won 6 championships and Kobe won 5 because when everybody else is freaking out, they manage to be just as good as they always are. And in these massive moments, guys like Corey Seager, guys like Eovaldi have the ability to regulate their heart rate and their focus in a way that allows them to come out on top in these games. And that's what I'll expect tomorrow night to see. You know, one crazy thing to me, though, I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but what are the Avs fans booing about after they get scored on? Are they booing their defense? Are they booing the other team scoring?
It just seems
so spoiled, like from a fan base, to be booing every time you get scored on last night.
Is it after they make the announcement of the visiting team goal? Because Dallas,
it's instant.
Okay.
It's instant. Dallas does the same thing. Just sit down and be quiet.
When Dallas announces that it's the who cares.
I like that. That's a good bit. That's a good bit. This seemed like.
It is weird because you don't know if you're just stepping into the living room for the first time and you weren't sure. You're like, who's getting booed here? Are they booing their own team? Is this like a Philadelphia, New York Jets or whatever type fan base that likes to boo their own guys?
Maybe the text can help me out here if that's something that, you know, always happens for Colorado. Maybe that's their bit, that they just get super ticked off. But I would feel like as a player, screw you guys. You know, we can't even give up. We're up 2-0 here. They just scored one, and now you are just booing like crazy. It seemed weird. Marcus Semien is producing, okay? He has now had a hit in 6 straight games and has reached in 13 of his past 15. During this 6-game hitting streak, he's hitting .400 with 3 ribbies, 5 walks, and a .920 OPS. He was 1-for-2 with 2 walks yesterday in that horrible game. They were 3 hit, but
I think... Horrible series.
What do you have? You have Semien, you have Tavares, you have Bangford right now. We just got to get all these guys, you know, playing at least average baseball or to their expectation at the same time. The rotation by itself is even better than the last time we updated it. An AL best 2.93 ERA. They are bringing this ungodly low rotational ERA down and still managing to lose games. But Corey Seager back tomorrow. Is this going to be the catalyst we need for a return to some Rangers offense, Chief? I certainly hope so.
It'll definitely be a nice start there for sure. And then you keep mixing things up with the order. Adolis is batting 7th. Now all of a sudden it looks like he's going to be up more in the order tonight. But you have the Krim factor as well. So I mean they're trying whatever they can. And hopefully the Seager bump there, and then you can start stacking him and Wyatt together and get some consistency with those two guys being in the lineup at the same time. But at this point, we're all just crossing our fingers for this thing.
Okay, 9-4-0, it's because Rantanen was involved. 4 points last night. He was involved in every goal. I think that might be something to it. Avalanche fans are the worst. They hate Dallas fans, says the 806. They are not a friendly or fun bunch.
We hate them, too.
I thought they were booing Rantanen last night, says the 9-4-0. They're trying to drown out the Stars fans. There weren't many Stars fans, but I thought they did a nice job at least peppering themselves.
Behind the bench there, it looked like they had quite a group there. Good for them to travel that way.
How about this latest quote from LeBron? Rangers and Mariners, by the way, coming up 6:30, huge series.
Hey, I was going to say something, too, about Eric. You called it, brother. Remember that really wild Rangers play that they had, that Little League play earlier this week?
Yeah.
You said it's going to be on a not top 10?
Yes.
It came in number 1.
Boom!
Gonna have a reign of terror up there.
And I'll be honest with you, Jake Berger had, you know, he had a part in that.
Yeah.
A huge part. Yeah. Thought that demotion could have happened on the heels of that. But they gave him a little bit more time to get himself together. Obviously, not enough. Here comes Krim. Let's see Krim get it done.
We know Berger. We met him in Surprise. Hell of a dude. Hell of a story. Been working hard all offseason on his defense to try to get good enough so he can be a plus defender. But yeah, that was a rough play overall to watch. Latest quote from LeBron James says he doesn't feel like it's his job to sell Luka on staying.
Uh-oh. What did you just say?
Quote, ultimately, he said, that trade happened for the future. That's not for me. Luka has to decide what he has to do with his future. Dun, dun, dun.
That's interesting. Yeah. I think this is LeBron, in fairness, being like, it's not like I'm here for the next half decade. It's not like we're trying to team up together because we want to go on some huge run here like I did in Miami or whatever. So I get LeBron being like, dude, I'm kind of year to year at this point. So yeah. I'm not going to rope him into something if he doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, I think, you know, people are trying to read between the lines and see anything to be like, LeBron's mad they traded Anthony Davis. It's not his squad anymore. But I just think LeBron's going to be very professional through this and acknowledge that he can't be on top forever. And maybe Luka gives him a decent chance if they can find rim protectors and wing defenders. But I think they got to trade Connect. I think they got to trade Reeves. Like, you don't need what those guys are giving you if you have Luka. You need guys who can defend and protect the rim and hopefully shoot threes at the same time.
Yes.
And catch alley-oops. And if you get those kind of players around, I think, you know, probably it sucks for LeBron. Bitter pill to swallow. You know, that it's he doesn't really have any say. But that's been the case for two or three years now. They have stopped doing what LeBron has wanted. It goes back to Kyrie Irving. So I think he's accepted that and has proven that he wants to stay with the Lakers regardless.
Well, and he even acknowledged after the game, he was like, I'm not going to talk about what we need or whatever, because when Anthony Davis did that, he was traded the next week.
Yeah.
Like, he referenced that.
Yeah,
that
was good. Yeah, it was good too. Yeah. It does make you wonder a little bit. Like, I wouldn't be surprised. I guess that was the other thing. Like, sources close to LeBron said they wouldn't be surprised if he leaves Los Angeles. And I guess... sure. What is that? Is that a 10, 15% probability? I think it's in there somewhere that he and his agent, Rich Paul and Anthony Davis, could get together at some point over the next month and a half or so before free agency starts, a couple of months, and come up with an idea of something else that could make sense that, you know, maybe you could tip the balance of power. I think the much more interesting thing right now is, what do the Mavs have to do to get involved in the Giannis sweepstakes in any way? And does Giannis's relationship with Jason Kidd, his first head coach, who got a lot out of Giannis, like Jason Kidd got a lot of credit for the work that he did there, and then the Nico Nike thing, does that give them any sort of angle? And we'll be all over it. C-note, musical chairs in the Cowboys locker room, and more coming up as we look at the Cowboys news of the evening next.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Fan. Welcome back, Nation. Time for the C-Note, Cowboys news of the evening. We are down to marginal risk of severe weather. It looks like it's clearing up pretty good out there. Segment's brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. It's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car truck wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. Franklin Frankel, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. Yeah, 864 says, shout out to Dak Prescott visiting Aledo High School today, continuing to be a leader and advocate and speaking to our youth about mental health and suicide awareness. So that's a good note to pass along here as we do open up this C-note here, Cowboys news of the evening. And we have a Texas Rangers starting lineup as well. We have Josh Smith starting at shortstop. It's a big win. Maybe Seager back tomorrow. So, but I love that Boch has just decided if you're hitting, we're playing you and we're batting you up top, right? And if you're not, then you're gonna have to wait for your opportunity. Langford's hitting second. Love that. I might just lead him off. But I mean, Smith's hitting so well that I like this. Jock Peterson hitting third though. We need this guy to get a good matchup here with Wu tonight. Rangers have good history hitting against Wu. I think maybe he's got like a 6.5 ERA against the Rangers throughout his career. Garcia hitting fourth. This is where I'd start looking at, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's time to make a trade for a new right fielder, or, you know, move Dolly down farther when he's cold, and when he's hot, then you put him back to fourth. What do you think? Simeon, the move to five has been really good for him, hasn't it?
Yes, yes. That's been one of the positives over the last couple of, I guess, what, 10 games?
Yeah, it's been great. I think it's 6 or 7 games. Heim hitting sixth, then Young, Krim, Tavares. Tavares has been hot for 6 or 7 games as well. It'll be interesting to see if Krim can carry over the hot stick from the minor leagues to first base, as he basically just swapped spots there with Jake Berger until further notice. Okay, we have NFL executives sharing thoughts on Cowboys draft. I know how much you love the anonymous GMs just firing, right?
We absolutely. Hey, you want to? Hey, I'll be glad to talk to you, man. But don't put my name with it, okay?
Yeah, off the record, I'll tell you anything you want to know.
I'll tell you everything you want to know about everybody else's team, but my team. But let's go off the record if we can.
We do go to the Athletic for this great piece of journalism, and they give you stuff on every team. So if you wanted to jump in there and look at a different team, that'd be your spot there, the New York Times Athletic website. But execs did not share some analysts' concerns that Dallas failed to draft a receiver was one of their big takeaways, saying the quote from a GM there, an executive, "I don't know why everyone wants them to take a receiver so bad when they have one they are paying $34 million a year to. There are always wideouts out there, and you have a guy that demands coverage." So kind of going with the idea that, hey, as long as you got that one player that the defense has to react to and double team, then you've set yourself up for success and job done, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a coaching staff that helps set the other guys up, and if you just have your standard average wide receiver 2, 3, and 4, but you don't really have that. Like, you have, I like the element that Turpin brings to the table, the explosiveness, and hopefully they're more creative in the way they get him the football, but you don't have guys that can just win. Like, Mingo's not winning routes. Tolbert's not winning routes. You don't even have, like, all the guys that you have that are your 2s and 3s and 4s, they're really all 4s.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the drop from CeeDee Lamb to the next guy is so big that it absolutely matters.
Yes.
And hopefully the new staff has an understanding of how to, you know, create opportunities for these guys schematically to get them open, because these guys can't just, they're not beating man coverage consistently. Absolutely not.
I wonder if Amari Cooper will wait until July, you know, because I would love to get the guys in through OTAs and see if anybody has made a leap, you know, that would make us confident. Hey, let's give this guy a shot here. Flournoy comes back with like a Miles Austin type of offseason. He's ready to go be an all pro receiver. Let's plug this guy in, plug that guy in. And then if it's not there, then maybe we look at Amari Cooper in the offseason, because I don't want to go into week one like this.
No, you can't. I really don't. I don't think you can. Not if you want to be serious about your season.
Yeah. Dallas' first two picks, Booker and Ezeraku, were team captains in college.
Yeah, that was big.
Quote, "They got the best guard in the draft. They got a pass rusher opposite Parsons who can actually win with speed." An executive said their pass rush is going to be a pain in the bleep to deal with. The corner they got in the third round, Revelle, might have gone in the back end of the first if he had never gotten hurt.
Absolutely right.
True. You think Revelle goes in the 20s?
Oh,
if he's unhurt?
Yeah, he was likely. I think he would have been the first corner off the board. Whew. So whenever I'm trying to, off the top of my head, didn't know when the first corner went in this draft, but I mean, that's kind of what
was it, Hairston?
Yeah,
from Kentucky.
So it was a little bit later in the draft, and it was in the 20s then. Where,
yeah, Buffalo at like 28.
Yeah, it was extremely late. So
took a while.
Panthers. Oh well, Jahdae Barron. Excuse me, Jahdae Barron with the Broncos.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
What was that? 20. That
was, yeah,
22. Did they move back
20,
two spots?
20. Oh, yeah, but it's still in the 20s though, is where it was.
Yeah.
Okay, then they talk about the Panthers' decision to take Tet McMillan at 8, doomed a slew of mock drafts that had Dallas taking him. But they say, quote, Booker's huge and he can knock people back, but he does run out of gas some, another executive said.
Sure.
Maybe endurance. We liked the corner they took, that he can change the angle of the ball arriving like Seattle used to do with those taller corners.
Sure.
Classic.
Yeah, I mean, the wingspan is through the roof there. That's a great point about him. Like, quarterbacks are going to have to think twice about the way they float balls in when you have a guy with that type of length.
Yeah.
Okay, we have some locker room changes coming in here for the Cowboys. Micah Parsons moving next to Dak. CeeDee Lamb taking Zach Martin's locker room spot. Terrence Steele taking Tank Lawrence's old locker. So you're bringing your leaders from both sides of the ball over there with Mike and Dak.
Do they have leader lockers? Do they have leadership lockers that look and feel and play a little bit different in there?
Just, put them in the corners?
It's just a location thing?
Prominent spots by the door?
You know what? I think what's going to drive... Well, they make these guys and gals now interview. A lot of the big ones have to do their interviews outside the locker room. There was a time where if you were next to a player that... like a Dak Prescott, or you were next to a quarterback or running back, receiver, big-time player, you had all those media crowding around your locker.
That was undesirable.
You're like, you did not want to be next to some guy who was having to deal with the media.
Well, that's going to be a hot spot with Dak and Micah there. That's just going to be cameras.
Well,
they
take them outside. They make them interview outside the locker room. So that's kind of a thing that they've done now to try and limit some access to being in the locker room.
Man, I'd have been hot as a pro athlete if I came back to my locker after a shower and I had to like ask a blogger to step aside so I could get to my clothes. It's just very awkward in those situations. You see it happen all the time?
Yeah, it's constant.
I wonder if Ezeraku, the team captain, is going to move in as the leader of this offense. Like, I think he and Micah Parsons' relationship is quite interesting coming
in
here.
It is. I remember a real quick story, if I could. Marion Barber, like, we were interviewing... I think it was Tank. Interviewing him, and all of a sudden, like, Marion Barber had aerosol deodorant, and it was in that area. Just completely missed the underarms. He was just spraying it.
It's like repellent, like blogger repellent.
Like in everybody's face. Like, yeah. We're standing there, and like Marion Barber's got his arms. He just like
hit the smoke screen on Spy Hunter.
It's just going, like, everybody's asking questions, and now it's in their eyes.
The biggest shock of all this is that the Barbarian used deodorant. Just thought he might have been a...
all natural kind of guy.
Yeah.
I could see that. We have some quotes from Cowboys rookies here. Tyler Booker on already signing his rookie deal. Only took him a week. He said, "We are both on the same page. We know this rookie contract, Lord willing, is just the first couple of I have coming in front of me. I told my agent, let's get this thing done. I'm ready to go to work." It's always weird when a player holds out like into training camp of the rookie deal because the framework is there.
Right.
You're going to get this amount of money. But there's a couple of things that if you want to negotiate hard, you can. But apparently, Booker and the team on the same page early on, and he's anxious to get to work. Texas A&M Shamar Stewart says he was shocked the Cowboys didn't take him at 12, Brian. Said, "I had a great meeting with Jerry. The D-line coach texted me a few days out and said he wanted to get on the phone and talk to my dad. He proceeded to reach out to my dad and tell him how much he loved me. So it was a shock. At the end of the day, it's God's plan. I'm never going to question God's plan. Whatever he's got for me, he's got for me. But, go at 12.
Yeah, they knew that McMillan was not going to be there. And Booker was their guy the whole time. They were prepared that they weren't going to have a shot at McMillan. And so they honed in on Booker, and he was there.
That's a guy in Shamar Stewart who ended up in Cincinnati, right?
Yeah.
He's feeling that. He's like, man, I could have been a Cowboy. Now I'm out here in Cincinnati with the skyline chili and nothing else. Jamar Chase loves Cincinnati because there's no distractions. # nothing to do.
Yeah, that's a tough interview, because you're probably thinking, holy cow, this is going to come. And you can see on the faces of the family members when a Cowboy family gets drafted into the Cowboys.
They're hyped, dude.
They are.
Yeah, yes. They're absolutely hyped.
And you think that's about to happen.
Agents got to be better, though, about warning their guys. Like, hey, this happened. These coaches, these GMs, they're schmoozing you the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
There's stories every year about, this team said they were definitely going to draft me. And then next thing I know, I'm in the second round.
And it's no knock on the coaches. You know, he's probably trying to learn more so we can have more ammunition for convincing the rest of the room that this is our guy.
There you go. When you go into the room and you're trying to sell a player like
that. I talked to his dad, man. Yeah, he's amazing, too.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, that could. But I don't know. Maybe as that coach, I'd call back and be like, hey, wanted to let you know that it's not going to come together for you. Sorry about that. Todd Archer writing about Brian Schottenheimer's draft strategy. The headline, Schottie's draft focus, adding leaders to Cowboys roster. And it's just more on the whole leadership deal. And Schottie's approach was, I think we've got outstanding football players that just happen to have incredible intangibles in leadership. It goes a long way. He says, some of the best players I've ever been around, LaDainian Tomlinson, Drew Brees, they weren't just great players. They were great people. They were great leaders. My take is just, I hope you don't sacrifice talent at all for that. You know, like, I think sometimes Jason Garrett went after the RKG too much, the right kind of guy, you know, and I think focusing on leadership while you're developing is smart, but just don't get carried away with that, you know, and I think at some point, like, you can think that we're going to lead ourselves into being more talented, you know, and I think that's tough, you know.
Yeah, yeah, I think for like a draft when you're trying to reestablish a culture, you're Schottie coming in, hey, I want to kind of get an influx of these type of dudes, and then you kind of become a little bit more lax on that over time.
Yeah, yeah, like I need great players who are also leaders. We're not taking any leaders who are just okay players, because you can't lead if you're not great.
Right? Exactly.
You can kind of lead by example and be a great soldier, but nobody's going to admire you enough to follow you unless you're balling. Okay, we got to run, G-Bag Nation. It's time for Krusty's Corner coming up next. Where are you taking us?
Guys, I'm going to take you down a path. We're going to run for the roses tomorrow. We'll talk about that next.
Yes, sir. Welcome back. It is the G-Bag Nation here on 105.3 The Fan. It's time now for Krusty's Corner, brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. And here's the king. Brian?
Thank you very much, Cheryl, and thank you very much to Reliant. Real quick, I'm going to put a bow on the college draft stuff from last week, if I could, before I get in.
Put that bow on. Is it a big red shiny bow, like in the Christmas commercials?
Just some thoughts about the maybe what the Cowboys were thinking about the draft last week, and especially up in the first and second rounds, maybe why they drafted Booker over, say, you know, some other guy, maybe a receiver with Golden or people like that. But they honestly believed that they were not going to get McMillan. They felt like there was too much ahead of them, teams with receivers. We should have thought about the Carolina Panthers more as a team that would have taken him after the, you know, watching Dallas play Carolina last year, just the receiving corps, not very good right
very
now.
Very mature to not just settle on the next wide receiver.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that they did that.
They really felt like that it was going to be Booker for them the whole time.
Really?
Is what they felt like, yeah. When it got to the second round, I was asking about a little bit about, well, hey, how do you end up with Ezeraku? You know, and they're like, well, you're kind of hoping, you're looking at the board, and maybe we had talked about some of the runners, you know, with, was it going to be Henderson? Was it, you know,
Johnson, Hampton,
Junkins. Junkins was a big player on their board. Junkins was a big player on their board. And actually, Luther Burden, the wide receiver from Missouri, was a big player on their board.
We were all over those last Friday.
Yeah. And they
nice job.
They were very hopeful. They were very hopeful that maybe that runner could have gotten to them, or maybe the wide receiver would have gotten to them.
Would they have taken one of those instead of Ezeraku?
I think so. Those were the names that, like, you know, when you as they're stacked and they're following along, it's like, and they're like, well, hey, they feel like that Ezeraku fell into their lap.
Yeah.
And they were totally cool with that.
I mean, you lose two guys and you still end up with a gift.
Yeah.
A steal of the second round possibly falling to you.
Yeah. Yeah. They were super happy. And I know we talked about it for 3 days. Of how they did follow their board. There wasn't a lot of jumping or thinking of jumping for tags and, oh man, we have a need here and we have to do that. No, they were really pleased overall with how their board was structured, how it fell. Yeah, they lost a couple of guys along the way, but there really wasn't any panic. They were perfectly happy with the next guy.
Did they consider Jalen Walker in the first and then offensive lineman in the second
round?
It
didn't sound like that. It sounded like to me it was more about Nolan was the guy that they were thinking about. They were thinking about either offense and defensive lineman is what they were thinking about at that time.
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the draft itself was really good, and all the issues you have with it are just a reflection of their lack of free agency. Yeah. That's what it comes down to. And you can only do so much in the draft when you have a billion needs. You can't solve them all in the draft.
Yeah.
So even though it was a good draft, we're still left thinking, man, this just ain't going to be good enough. And it's because of the way they team build. And everything goes back to that. And it's awful.
But do you feel like they had a pretty good offseason when it came to at least going out and trying to address something? I know they didn't spend...
If you're grading on the cowboy curve, sure.
Yeah, as something is better than nothing.
Right.
That's, yeah.
But like your running back and receiver stuff right now,
yeah,
that could have been solved if you just had an ounce of care in free agency.
Yeah, or a fourth round pick maybe too.
Or, no question.
But they think their fourth round pick, and we'll see.
Right.
I talked to some people in the organization. They're like, hey, we're still talking about a lot of receivers here. We're still talking about some things. So I don't think this thing is dead yet. I think that we'll see what happens. Some June 1 names might be a possibility. Keep some money available for some June 1 cuts. So I don't think this wide receiver thing is dead by any means.
Agreed.
At all.
They did a nice job. They actually end up spending $39 million, but that is 29th in the NFL.
Yeah. Well, hopefully the quality of the player, hopefully some of these guys will be like an Eric Kendricks when you're talking
They've shown they hit those. And there's going to be at least a couple of them.
Like that.
Yeah.
So hopefully. Okay, that kind of ties up the Cowboys. You guys know my next passion next to auto racing is horse racing. Love horse racing. This is like my favorite time of the year. So if you allow me a little latitude here, I'm going to try and walk you through some things and not just who I'm going to pick kind of thing, but I'm going to give you a little insight here if I could. Because I've got some Gang of Seven. They're actually horse racing dudes, too.
Wow, dude.
I just...
You got a lot of gangs.
Well, you meet these people along the way. They want to know they're from different parts of the country.
Yeah,
they
just bargain your Cowboys info for their info.
That's exactly right. Matter of fact, the races are going on to Texas Motor Speedway right now, or this tomorrow or Sunday. And I'm meeting my crew chief buddies for dinner tonight over in Fort Worth. And it's going to be... I know we're going to be talking about the NFL draft, but I always told them... You tell me how to make that car go 200 miles an hour, and I'll tell you who you're going to pick.
It's a fair trade.
That was always my deal. So I learned a lot that way. I learned stuff about the Kentucky Derby here. Okay, the weather in Kentucky Derby, I got right now, the guys have allowed me to watch. We got the Oaks. We got the Oaks on, which is the Friday's races from the Derby.
Sometimes it's a slop fest out there.
Okay, this is where I'm glad you brought that up, Eric. Weather for Churchill Downs, there's for tomorrow. 95% chance of rain.
Boom. Dang.
During the day. Okay. 60% chance of rain at post time. So we're late in the day, around 5 o'clock here. You know, we're talking about that's when we're going to go to post. All right. This is what I know about Churchill Downs. If you're into the ponies and you want to bet these things and you're looking for mutters, I'm going to give you a couple of mutters you need to think about, maybe to pair with your tickets with some of the favorites.
Mud grip it.
But what I'm going to also tell you is this. I'm going to give you a little insight here. The track at Churchill Downs, it drains from the infield to the stands.
Uh-oh.
So, okay. What does that mean?
Yeah, what do you mean by
wet
that?
Wet track.
Well, wet track. But if it drains from the inside rail to the outside rail.
You want to be on the outside.
No, you want to be on the inside.
You want the mud? You want the wet?
No. You don't want the wet. The track drains left to right. So if you're in post position 1, 2, 3, 4, drier trip, potentially.
Okay.
And horses freak out on this. Horses freak out when mud flies into their face. So
they're goggled up. Are they goggled up?
The riders are goggled up.
Not the horses.
The horses have got their face coverings on, but some have the blinkers to cover the eyes and stuff like that. But horses cannot stand to have mud fly in their face.
Just like your gorilla theory.
Yeah, blind them. Yeah, they don't like that. So they're going to try and get out of that. Okay, here are the top mudders for this thing. Out of the 7 hole, Lexor Cafe is in the, I'd say in the seven, that's a 15-1 horse. This is a Japanese horse, by the way, but it was sired by American Pharoah, Triple Crown winner.
Ooh, legend.
Ooh, yeah.
Good DNA.
Okay. Japanese horse, record on wet tracks, 4 starts, 3 wins, 1 second. 15-1, guys.
I like that.
15-1.
Cha-ching.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw he won Japan's Fukuryu Stakes.
The Fukuryu Stakes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Had to be careful when I said that one.
This horse is a stalker, which it could be really an advantage in muddy conditions. Keep an eye on Lexor Cafe coming out of the 7 hole.
Okay.
15-1.
We got the eye on the cafe.
Right, right.
What's a stalker mean? He's right off the leader.
He kind of holds, he holds, he holds, he holds, and then bang. Boom. Yeah. So,
all right.
So muddy conditions, that favors that type of horse. 4 starts, 3 wins, 1 second. Okay. Coming out of the 16 post. Now, this is a little further. This is, we're talking about potentially sloppy area out there because of the way the track drains. But out of the 16 post, at 30-1, Cole Battle. Cole Battle is a horse. Recently won the Jean Lafitte Stakes in its debut race on, and it's won, it's got 2 starts, 2 wins on sloppy tracks. 2 starts, 2 wins. That's a 30-1 horse, 16 spot. That's a little wide. That's a far trip out there. We've never had a winner come out of the 17 spot. I'm about to talk about that horse.
I'm going to box the 7 and 17, Brian. I'm going big.
You're looking at that?
Mm-hmm.
American Promise, 30-1, coming out of the 5 hole. Most Kentucky Derby wins is come out of the 5 hole.
How about it?
Okay.
The Marcus Simeon hole.
Yeah. American Promise, 30-1. Record on wet tracks, 1 win, 1 8th place finish. Okay, not so good on the second. But the maiden win at Oaklawn Park on a muddy track, Dwayne Lucas, the Hall of Fame trainer, is the trainer for this horse.
So we don't know a lot about these horses that run in this thing, do we? Only that they've won.
Yeah, that's the whole idea, whether they win Louisiana. California horses are really, really good in this thing, by the way.
Hmm.
For some, when you look at the history of the Derby, California horses tend to do pretty well in here. That's another thing you could kind of look at. The last horse I want to talk about here in the mudders. Now, this horse has no prior starts in mud, but it was sired, and we're talking about Journalism. Journalism is a 3-1. It's going to be the favorite. It's in the 8 hole, the eighth spot. No prior starts in wet track, but its pedigree deep on this. It was sired by Curling. Curling is a stallion who often excelled on wet surfaces. So if you're looking for bloodlines
genetics.
Of a horse, genetics of a horse, and that's kind of what we do in horse racing. You look at, whoa, who's the mom? Who's the dad?
Is it more important, mom or dad? Like, does dad matter more than mom?
I think it's dad is the one that matters the most here.
There we go.
While Journalism lacks experience on muddy tracks, his pedigree suggests he could potentially adapt. Okay, that's it for that. Just another thing to think about here. I got about a minute or so here. Just think about this. 28 of the last 33 Derby winners have had a buyer speed rating over 95. That's how they measure. That's like the 40-yard dash for the horses.
Okay. What's your buyer speed?
Yeah, what's your buyer speed?
Okay.
Journalism, who's the favorite, had a speed of 108. Sandman, this is the horse, Sandman, that's in the 17 spot. There's never been a winner of the Derby from the 17th
Doesn't
spot.
Sound like the day to do with all this rain coming in.
Yeah. Sandman's got 99 speed. Citizen Bull coming out of the first spot has got a 98. Burnham Square at 96. Eastern Avenue at 96. Publisher at 95. We talked about American Promise at 95. And those are your horses.
So how's Journalism lose if he's got a 108 running against 96s?
35% of the horses.
Yeah.
That are favored across American tracks are winners.
35%. Okay.
So when you think about you putting your tickets together, yeah, you want to put these favorites with, but pair them with some of these horses that have these long, these 30-1 odds.
$5 exacta box.
Yeah, just kind of craft your ticket, put some long shots in there. We had an 80-1 win it here 3 years ago. So you just every once in a while it's kind of fun to do those things. but make sure you're thinking about horses that can run in the slop, because tomorrow it's going
to
be probably
where do you make your best? You go out to Grand Prairie? Or
I go out to Grand Prairie is what I would do.
I love that. What's the most you've ever won in a single day betting ponies?
Oh, about $3,000.
Nice.
Yeah.
It's a good score right
there. I handed Jeff Kavanaugh. Jeff Kavanaugh.
That was that day?
No.
You were on fire that day.
I was on fire that day. We were betting races in Australia that day, too. Kavanaugh parked the car, and I handed him $60. He goes, what's this for? I go, we just won the first race. He goes, oh, this is going to be a great day. It was fun. We had a lot of fun.
The Coldies were flowing. Thank you, guys. Everybody was betting. Appreciate that.
Good luck with your tickets tomorrow.
Brian brought us in Krusty's Corner every afternoon, 3:40 here in the G-Bag Nation. It's time for a Friday News Dump. Chief, what's in store?
We prep our bodies for a legendary sports weekend with a few stats of the day and the Delco Defecator next in the nation.